not quite one-fourth, and never just half, but the entirety of one primate, whole. It is the part of a story, an idea that means more to you than me. Hello and welcome to Full Gorilla Life. We are Jeremy Keene,
Larry Medina,
and Corey Hewlings.
Each week, we will break down an important life concept or talk with an inspiring person so that you can live your full gorilla life.
All right, we'd like to welcome you back onto the podcast. And today we'd like to welcome Dr. Raul Story. I figured I had to do the intro because I'm the only one that can get it.
Yeah.
Right. So Dr. Story has been a friend of the podcast for some time. So I personally met Dr. Story back in, I want to say like 2015 or so, maybe a little bit before that. But my mom was sick and Dr. Story was her doctor. And he was an awesome physician, took good care of my mom. And also we know him through Jeremy's wife.
Before we leave your mom though, also I remember you saying that your mom was like in love with you.
Oh, she was in love. Like, yeah, she was. Listen, here's the thing. Yeah, if he'll definitely raise any lady's spirits. Yeah. So.
I'll be honest, taking our picture next to him, I was like, man, maybe I should stand up on the stairs or something. Like, I wanted to look my best self.
Failed.
Yeah.
So
let's try again tomorrow.
We all did. All right. So it helps that he's a doctor too.
And he knows how to dress too. He's got nice wingtips on. Yeah. I'm sitting here. Me and Larry are barefoot. He's got nice wingtips on. Yeah. And
well, no bullying here. Okay. No bullying here.
But I appreciate somebody that knows how to dress. All right.
No, he does because I'm a bum. This is Larry. Yeah. I'm a complete bum. I basically wear gym shorts and t-shirts everywhere I go. Uh-huh. And Corey's like, let me wear the best hat. Let me get the best suit.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
nice pair of shoes.
Yeah, top to bottom. Yeah.
Stacked leather soles. Like, listen.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I appreciate that.
I noticed it when he walked in the door. I'm used to hanging out with these dudes. So I'm like, I can be barefoot. It's my house, whatever.
But then you're like, now you're like, you wish
I'm like, dang, I should have wore something nice.
Yeah. All right. But before we get in too much into the story, we like to go ahead and get started with our gorilla gauntlet. Okay. And I'll let Jeremy lead that
so
off.
So our gorilla gauntlet's like about 9-10 rapid fire questions just to get to know you real quick. So perfect. The first thing that pops to your mind, you say it, good, bad, and different. You can also say pass if you'd like. So
all right,
you ready?
Let's do this.
All right. City that you're from?
Venezuela, Valencia, Venezuela.
Okay. iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Favorite movie or book?
Braveheart.
Nice. Oh, freedom.
Yes, that's a classic.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
I like that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that you knew it off the top of your head, too.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Favorite genre of music?
I would say there are different ones. Flamenco. Flamenco, Spanish, like flamenco music.
Okay.
Like,
so do you know how to salsa?
In Venezuela, we kind of, everybody does. I mean,
but
it's different. When you're growing up in Venezuela, if you don't dance at all and you get to the age where you get invited to those like sweet 16 quinceañeras type of parties,
that's not a good look.
That's not a good look.
It's not a good look.
Exactly. Right. You're not going to be.
You might as well show up in gym shorts and t-shirt. Okay.
So when you're growing up in South America, you need to learn how to dance like. You know,
I can see that.
Yeah.
I've taken salsa lessons, but I don't think it's gotten me any better. I'm still a complete gringo. Like,
but here, you don't get the social pressure that you have to do it. Oh, you know,
okay. Yeah. True.
Down it's there true. Is like all the you girls. When you are 15, all the girls want to dance.
Here it's so like,
they stand on each side. Girls on one side, boys on the other.
Yeah. Here it's like, look at the gringo trying.
Yeah. They like that too.
Good effort.
They
good
like
effort.
That too. Yeah. Even better.
That's right. Exactly.
That's me. A for effort.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. We have four more.
Okay.
Reservation or just walk in?
Walk in.
All right. Favorite type of food?
Thai.
Thai. Nice. What do you drive?
Range Rover.
Beer, whiskey, or wine?
Doctor. Scotch.
Scotch. Nice. Okay. Favorite blend? You said, I think you guys were talking a little bit before we started recording on some scotch.
Buchanan's 18.
Oh, 18. Okay. So
I met Dr. Story through my wife. She is an RN who works with Dr. Story. So, we're glad to have you on.
Thank you.
And we'd like to just kind of start and let you kind of
what got you where you're at? You can start kind of a little bit of a background.
Well, actually, if you don't mind, right?
Sure.
So you're born in Venezuela.
Born and raised in Venezuela.
Okay, and then when did you come to the States?
Okay, so I was born and raised in Venezuela, and I went to med school in Venezuela.
Oh, okay.
So when I was done with med school down there, I got accepted to do a fellowship training in MD Anderson in Houston, Texas. It's one of the big cancer centers in the U.S. So as soon as I was done with my med school, I got accepted to do training there for a couple of years. And that's what brought me first to Houston, to America. And the reason why I ended up in that hospital is when I was in high school, my dad was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Uh-huh. And we brought him to that hospital to be treated. So when that happened, when we had that experience, then I got, you know, connected to that hospital. I got connected to the oncology world before being involved with medicine.
So now your dad got diagnosed before you were in med school?
Before I was in med school.
Okay.
So we brought him to the U.S. so he could be treated there.
Okay.
So when I was in the last year of high school.
Okay.
I was a senior. And then he got diagnosed with prostate cancer. So I was already in the process to be, you know, to apply for med school and the whole thing. And he got diagnosed. So I was already in the process of being involved with medicine. So we started looking for what is the best place we can take him to be treated. So after we did some research, we learned about this hospital in Houston, and that's where we took him.
Oh, nice.
And so we flew him and he got treatment, and you know, I started getting involved with oncology even before getting involved in medicine.
Okay.
So after that, during the whole med school, I was coming to the U.S. every summer to MD Anderson to do some rotations there. So by the time I ended med school back home, there was no question about the type of path I was going to take.
Hmm. So did you always want to do medicine?
Medicine, yes.
Even before your father got
sick?
So you had planned on doing medicine regardless?
Yeah, well, it was interesting because like since growing up, I didn't like anything else. So it was not like, oh, I only like medicine. It's like, yes, I want medicine, but I look around about different things and I didn't see myself doing anything different. So basically it's like, this is the only thing I like. I feel like I have passion for it, but I just didn't enjoy anything different than this. I don't think there was a question since I was growing up that I was going to do something different than this.
Was there anybody in your life that was involved in medicine or?
Actually, I have two uncles that are doctors.
Okay.
You know, one of them is not with us anymore. He's a family practice and he died when I was younger. So I couldn't say that he was an inspiration to me because I wasn't that close to him. Mm-hmm. And I have another uncle who is a sports medicine doctor. And he still practices in Venezuela. In back home in my city, all the rookie league for the major leagues in baseball here, they play there. So all the rookies before coming here, they're playing in Venezuela, in Valencia.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
So my uncle, in his career of sports medicine, is mainly with baseball. So he's the sports medicine of the rookie league down there in Venezuela.
Okay. Are you a baseball fan?
Not as much I should, I guess. No. Like in Venezuela, everyone is a baseball fan.
Yeah.
Everyone plays. Even if you don't know how to play, you know how to hit the ball. But not. I'm not like, I don't follow like.
So is it bigger than soccer there?
Much bigger. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Number one sport in the country is baseball.
Soccer, like if you were to ask.
Well, I think most Venezuelans, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think from what I've seen, they go for the Brazil team in soccer more than their own.
Totally right.
Okay.
You're totally right. You know, historically, Venezuela doesn't have a great team in soccer. Nowadays, in the last, I would say, decade, you know, our soccer has improved. And we have better players. We have a couple players playing in Europe. But we always have root for Brazil or Argentina, historically. Okay. Now, people are like more, you know, towards our own team, even though it's not the best. but it's growing a lot.
It's growing.
It's growing. It's growing a lot.
So you do your couple years after med school out in Houston.
Correct.
What brings you to Paradise?
All right. Florida? Well, after that, it was it's quite a journey. After Houston, I went to residency in Texas Tech University. So I went to the medical campus in El Paso, Texas. Okay. So I was there for 3 years. Then I moved after that when it was, I complete my training there. I went to University of Louisville in Kentucky and spent there 3 years where I learned how to drink bourbon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, yeah. I'm with you. Kentucky. Yeah. I've been there for this.
Yeah. and once I was done with my training in hematology oncology at University of Louisville, it was basically a family decision. You know, after being so many years away from home, my whole family retired, and my parents retired in Miami Beach 14 years ago. And my only sister have been living in Miami for the last 20. Okay. So after being away for so many years, traveling and getting training here and there in Texas, Kentucky, going around, I felt like it was the right thing to do to get close to family.
Okay.
So I decided to move to Florida on those terms, trying to get close to my family, my parents. My parents, for sure, they're not getting any younger.
Yes.
So I thought I was going to regret if I didn't spend this time with them.
I got you.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense.
And after 7 years being in Vero Beach, I think it was the best decision I could have ever made.
Yeah. So they live in Miami right now?
They live in Miami. And
your dad's okay?
Yeah, my dad is good. This year, we actually had the opportunity to run the Miami Marathon together.
Oh, okay.
My dad has been 23 years on treatment for prostate cancer.
Very nice.
And he has been a marathoner his whole life.
That's the ING down there, right?
The ING, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice
I think
race.
Now they call it, it's an ING. Before, it has a different name, but
yeah.
But I think it's the ING now. Yeah. And so my dad has been a marathoner his whole life. And every year, twice a year, he was running in different cities in the world, like mainly in the spring in Europe and New York City Marathon in fall.
What's his best time?
Best time, I think, never under 4 hours.
Never under
4 hours.
Us but neither.
Under
us
five?
Neither. Yeah. No, not under five either.
Yeah.
So we ran a marathon earlier this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, where?
And when I say ran, I'm using that term loosely.
Okay.
But when he says we, he means these two.
Yeah. Run that one.
We, Jeremy's like,
I
did not
get that one. I've done it, but it was several years back now.
Yeah, we did not run it very fast.
Yeah. We completed it.
That's great. I mean, that's a great achievement. And I'm not a marathoner. I mean, I have run, you know, several half marathons.
Yeah. Okay.
And I enjoy running a lot. But we decided to run together. I thought it was going to be a very meaningful experience, you know, him having his history of running marathons and then me being able to run with him was very special.
Were you able to keep up with him? Was he
he's
been training that hard. I don't know if you
I know. Well, I have to say you know, because he has been on the treatment for the cancer and because of the treatment, as a side effect of it, he developed osteoporosis, so his bones are not that strong. So he's not a runner anymore, but he walks.
Okay. But the running helps, right?
Yeah. I mean, being active and, you know, makes the bones, you know, getting better health. But he's not running because with the pressure of the running, you know, we can have fractures and stuff.
Yeah. Like that. Makes sense.
So that's the last thing we want.
Yeah.
So, but he have done a great job, like, maintaining his activity through walking. So I ran, he walked. So, but it was a great experience. So
that's fantastic.
Put together a whole team with friends and we did the whole thing and it was beautiful. It was a great, great experience.
So that sounds awesome.
Yeah. He's a runner. What do you do when you're not in the office?
I run. I run too. I run not to the level of running marathons all the time. Mm-hmm. I tend to run at least between an hour a day. Let's say between 6-7 miles a day.
That's an hour more than me.
Yeah. 6 or 7 miles more than me. Right. He probably knows more cardiologists than we do. So probably like, get your hour in. We just don't hear that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So I run, and whenever I have a chance, I go paddle surfing.
Okay.
And
what kind of surfing?
Paddle surfing. Like paddle boarding, but surfing.
Yeah.
And that's usually what I do. And now I got hooked with Orange Theory Gym. They recently opened in here.
Okay. Yeah. Where they yell at you?
Do they yell at you?
Oh, yeah. They get on the loudspeaker and yell at you, don't they?
Don't they motivate like, you.
I think motivate.
Motivate. Let's call it motivation.
Coach. Yeah. They coach you. They coach
exactly.
Motivational. It's motivational. Yeah. I'm not saying it in a bad way. I'm just, I hear it from outside the building. Let's go, people. Yeah.
No, it's actually pretty good. I like it. I'm enjoying it. I go like maybe twice a week.
Okay.
And what I like about it is like I use it as a cross training between, you know, the running and and because I go there and I don't have to think. They tell you what to do.
Yeah.
You just go in and out and you know in an hour you're going to get a great workout and you're done.
Which it's mainly cardio, right?
No, they have a combination. They do like that. Like two different kind of exercise with cardio. One is with the rower and the other one is with the treadmill. And then they have a station of weights. So you alternate everyone like jump in between the three stations. It's pretty good.
Is there a snack break in there?
After you go to short of water bag. Right?
No. Anyway. Okay.
So, well, but we have like Jeremy, the expert in sports here.
True. Yeah,
the you expert. Know. It's been a while.
We're using
do as I say, not as I do, right?
We're using air quotes.
As you should.
All right. No, but yeah. So being that it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yeah.
What are some tips, right, that we could give out to our listeners, that, to help themselves to get awareness early or to try and catch things early, right? Because that's key, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I would say is one of the best, advice we can give. And this month being, you know, breast cancer awareness, but I think we can expand a little bit into screening in general to the cancers. We have screening tools available. And I would say, of course, like mammogram is one of the, if we have to explain about the type of screening tools that has proven to save lives, we have a handful of them. And one of them is mammograms. So I would recommend like women, you know, to do their mammograms. And there has been a lot of controversy lately about the what age do you have to start getting your mammograms and all that. But as a general rule, I would suggest for women to talk to their primary doctors and discuss, you know, the options of being screened for cancers. And so mammogram is one of them. The other one is pap smears for women to being able to pick up cancer of the cervix the earliest you can and increasing the rates of curing people with cancer of the cervix. Then we also have colonoscopies. Every person, men and women, should get a colonoscopy at the age of 50 as a general rule, unless you have a family member, direct family member who had colon cancer. So basically you pick 10 years prior to the age that family member got the cancer, and that's at the age you should start getting a screen. And basically, it's a direct family member, like a father, you know.
Would you say that for any type of cancer? If you have a family that had that cancer, you would try to get that screening?
No.
Or is it vary depending on the one?
Unfortunately, we don't have a screening tool for every cancer. We only have like, you know, a handful, as I said, of cancer screening tools that have demonstrated that save lives. So I wish we could have like many other ones because there are so many cancers that needs that. And but we don't have. And recently, a few years ago, we have low dose CAT scans has been used as a screening tool for patients that qualify for it, like patients who have a long history of smoking, certain age, so they can get a low dose radiation scan, CAT scan of the chest, and to be able to identify lung nodules in patients with high risk.
What's the difference between the low dose radiation?
The low dose is like the same. The CAT scan is exposure to radiation. It's less. So we learned that, you know, being able to do a CAT scan that has less radiation effect over the patient, you know, is able to identify lung nodules good enough so we can act on them if it's required. Nice. So those are the main ones.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
So you are an oncologist. You treat all different types of cancer.
Correct.
So do you diagnose too, or do they already know they have cancer when they come?
Mm-hmm. The majority of the time, I'm a hematology and I'm an oncologist as well. Okay. So I'm basically, to give a brief explanation, you know, medical oncology treats cancers. different kinds. And hematologies, you can treat blood diseases. Some of them can be malignant, but some others can be benign type of blood diseases, like low iron in your blood or, you know, low platelets or something that is not related to cancer. So in the oncology part, as you mentioned, the majority of the patients that I see are referred by primary doctors who already had a concern about something they saw that it was, you know, I'm going to repeat that again, concerning for cancer. So they initiate the process. And then once they identify something that is worrisome, so that's when they refer the patients to us.
So are they diagnosed when they come to you?
Not all the time. Yeah. Not all the time, but at least there is something abnormal that is suspicious. So like, for an example, a primary care physician do a CAT scan because the patient was complaining of coughing. That was not being, you know, is not getting better. So in the CAT scan, they identify a lung nodule. And this is a patient that has been smoking a pack a day for the last 20 years. So you get concerned with that lung nodule. So sometimes those patients get referred to us without the diagnosis. And we initiate the process of doing the biopsies and identifying exactly what we're dealing with. Right. And some other times, the primary cares are more active. Or if we get a patient referred by a pulmonologist or a different specialty, they are more proactive into doing biopsies and getting the right diagnosis before sending the patient. But I would say the minority of the patients are like that.
So what's that like when you have to tell a patient that they have cancer?
It's never easy. It's never easy. And I hope, you know, the majority of the oncologists will share that feeling with me. You know, I hope like it never gets easy to tell someone that has cancer. And I can't imagine.
I've had to give people really bad news before, and it's got to feel that same way almost.
Yeah.
Just devastating news.
It is. And I want for the people that are listening to this talk, I want them to understand that it is very difficult for the patients, of course. Like, you know, it's something devastating. But it's also hard for us that we have to share. You know, I feel honored and I feel very blessed that I'm able to be by their side mm-hmm. while they're going with such a difficult experience in their life. But it's very hard for us too.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think, and especially because there's people that come in for months and years of treatment.
You get
to know these people over a long term. So you build a relationship.
Absolutely.
So the ups and downs, you feel that with them. You become friends and you become kind of in that relationship of fighting this together. And I think
many times you end up seeing the patients and their family members more than your own family.
I could see that.
And it's real. It's real when you have patients that are coming to treatments to your office on mm-hmm. a weekly basis. You know, you end up seeing, they become family to you. And honestly, I like that. I want my patients to become family. I want to be attached. When people say, "Okay, you know what? You see that every day. You know, it doesn't bother you anymore." I think that the moment that it doesn't bother me anymore is the time to quit. It's the time to quit doing what I'm doing.
That's a good way to put it. I think
that speaks volumes about you, though.
Thank you. I can't imagine.
I would hope that every doctor's like that, but I can't imagine everyone is.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you from experience, from what I saw, right? So as I mentioned before, Dr. Storr was my mom's oncologist, and your bedside manner was top notch. Thank you. You know, like bar none.
It means the world to me.
Yeah. No, seriously, because like, you know, we had our ups and we had our downs, and obviously we had are down at the very end. But speaking from, I wasn't your direct patient, but I would be there a lot of the times with my mom. And I could tell you, like, she didn't mind going to see you because your bedside manner was fantastic. And, you know, you made her feel good regardless. And I feel like that's a huge thing for people who may be experiencing something, right? Whether it's cancer or anything, really. It's all about your attitude and how people make you feel. And because honestly, my mom was diagnosed, she was given 6 months. Me and you talked about this. And honestly, when we talked about it, we were like, you know, let's just not talk about that anymore. Let's not give any timeframes and let's just do our best to make everything, you know, just upbeat and better and what have you. And I feel that got her 3 more years of her life.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
And you know, that was the goal.
Yeah.
Not only the 3 more years, but 3 good years.
Three good years.
Where she could enjoy, you know, the time with family. And, you know, it's interesting because when we talk about cure or in the world of cancer, cure is only absence of disease. But I do feel like even though cure might not be an option sometimes, there is healing. The healing process always plays a role, always has a space. Because if we talk about healing, about the combination of body, mind, and soul, we're talking about like cancer is only one piece. It's the organic part of the body. But your mind, your soul is also involved into the whole process. So I think in general, the medical field haven't done a great job historically on involved like the soul, the mind, the well-being in general of the patients. So, and that's what I want to change. I want to make sure patients are feeling good and I am part of their healing process despite of living with cancer.
So that's a great segue because something I wanted to make sure that we got a chance to talk about because I know you started with at your in your office and in the room, the arts and medicine program that you got started up with. I don't want to butcher the description, but I know that that's been pretty empowering for the patients. But if you want to explain kind of, I think it's really cool and it kind of, I feel like it speaks to the spirit and the soul side.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is a project that, you know, I have been very passionate for the last, you know, couple of years. It was how everything started is I was in a cancer gala and sharing table with Barbara Hoffman. She was the director of the Cultural Council of Indian River. Mm-hmm. And while we were sharing table and sharing dinner at this cancer gala, we started talking about the power of the arts and how we believe the arts, you know, benefit everybody in general, not only patients, but in general.
They have a healing property.
Exactly. They sure. do. It like, does.
Going
it
back
does.
To the healing.
Yeah, absolutely. It has a
for healing. The mind, especially. Yeah,
absolutely. So I have my previous experiences with arts and healthcare. And Barbara is definitely a huge advocate for the arts. And so what everything started 2 years ago. Fast forward today, we are completing our 6 months of our Arts in Medicine program. It's what we did is we aligned with one of the world leaders in arts in medicine at University of Florida. Her name is Jill Sankey. There is like a handful of people who are considered world leaders in this field, and this lady is one of them. So the three of us, we got together and created a program where we have around 12 to 13, between 12 and 16 artists of different kind of liberal arts. We have storytellers, poetry, musician, music therapy. We have painters. We have arts and craft, multiple different type of artists actively involved in the process of the treatment of cancer. While the patients are in the office getting their infusions, we have always an artist participating or actively intervening in the process of being treated for the cancer. And there is a lot of data that support that the arts improve the anxiety. It has a lot of benefit into the depression of the patients. It changes or create a different perspective of on the perception of the pain, where even the patients decrease the intake of opioids. And we know how difficult, how such an issue is that, you know, the problem with the opioids in the country.
Yeah.
So patients that have been exposed to the arts on their treatment or while they're going through their journey of cancer decreases the intake of painkillers and also helps creating that sense of community with the patients because all of them participate into the process of creating. And you create this sandbox where they can be creative, they can play, they can work together and create community. And it helps with the whole process of healing that we were talking about.
For someone that hasn't had to go through the process, the infusions can take hours, correct? Like how long? I mean, some patients are there for several hours.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are different kind of treatments or chemotherapy. You know, they take different amount of time to be infused. We have patients that can come just for an hour for a 15 minutes infusion.
Okay.
Or we have patients that come at 9 in the morning and they stay until 4:30 p.m. Oh, the wow. whole day getting infusion.
And I feel so, like that arts and medicine program has to help that person even more so because they're there in this room.
Absolutely.
With minimal break or away, and they have this chance to kind of at least learn something.
Well, I mean, it makes sense to me, you know, because I can even think of just myself, you know, sometimes you're in a bad mood, whatever, you put on some good music, you know, some uplifting stuff. And before you know it, you can find yourself drifting out of it, you know,
absolutely.
Just based on, you know, music.
Yeah.
And really you haven't done anything different.
Yeah. And not only that, I mean, we have like two different type of models where we have the active arts where the patients can all participate in the, into the creation process. Or we also have iPads with all of them has been loaded with different apps where the patient can, first of all, like create music digitally.
Okay.
Or they can create art. So if the patients don't want to be interactive at some point, you know, they can get their own iPad. Every patient get an iPad in the whole office and they can, with their headphones, and they can, you know, be detached from That's the awesome. Whole group. Type
so
of
they can be
activity
in their own way without
correct and they awesome. Can still be creative and be, you know, if they, some people, everyone feels different when they're in the chemotherapy area, so we want to be respectful too.
Yeah.
When people don't want to participate into group type of activities, but we have that option where the patients can be basically by themselves but also continue to be creative and using the That's power great. Of the arts to the process of healing.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Now yeah, no, I mean, that's huge, right? So that healing piece. Now, what do you see in the future for cancer and cancer patients? What you know, there's a lot of talk out there about immunotherapies and different types of therapies. And obviously, you're not a fortune teller, so hard to say, right? What's going to happen? But in your opinion or your thoughts, what do you think?
That's a great question, and thank you for asking that. Because in my perspective, the advances we have had in oncology treatments in the last decade has been much faster, or I would say, I don't know, bigger. The advances has been bigger in the last 10 years than in the previous 40. So what's going to happen, and I'm going to come back to the immunotherapy, what you said, what's going to happen is we're going to have all these people that eventually are going to be living with cancer. And we're going to be able, in many occasions, to convert cancer into a chronic disease, like people who live with diabetes, like people who live with high blood pressure, like people who live with any of the chronic diseases we are aware now. So we're going to be able to do that in many occasions. So we're going to have patients that are going to be coming once in a while to the office to be treated for cancer, and they're going to continue having a good quality of life and extending their life and basically dying of something else. But they're going to be on treatment, active treatment for cancer for the rest of their life. There are several diseases that we have been able to do that. And coming back to the immunotherapy part, that's one of the new kid on the block to treat cancer. And those are infusions or medications. They're different kind of immunotherapy, but I'm going to talk to the most popular one that I'm sure you guys have seen on TV. And it's basically an infusion of a medication that what it does is enhance the patient's immune system, their own immune system to attack the cancer. So basically, this is not chemotherapy. You are not giving any toxic medication. You're giving a substance that is going to enhance your own immune system to attack the cancer. So it has much less side effects.
Right.
And is well tolerated. For an example, if I can give you a great example, my oldest patient I have now, it's a 91 years old man who has melanoma, disseminated melanoma, who is coming to my office once a month to get an infusion that is not causing any side effects at all to him, and he play golf 3 times a week. And every time we do a scan, the tumors continue to shrink. So that's what we're seeing now. Before, crazy. If you asked me like 20 years ago, I would never, even in my wildest dream, would ever think that I was going to treat a 91 years old patient.
20 That's, years ago? What were you look like you were in middle school 20 years ago.
Yeah. But even my mentors, you know, the interesting thing is one generation above us, you know, my mentors, when they did their training, they were trained on 2 or 3 different chemotherapy drugs. So with 3 drugs, they were treating all type of cancers.
Yeah.
Every cancer that you can imagine, they were using three drugs to treat all those cancers.
That's crazy.
Nowadays, we have different medications being, you know, assigned or getting an indication for the treatment of cancer pretty much on a weekly basis.
I could see that.
So we have so many
treatments have just grown exponentially.
Correct.
Over the last 10 years.
Exactly.
So you can only presume over the next 10 years, they'll just continue to grow exponentially.
Oh yeah, totally.
Moore's Law,
totally.
Right? I mean, you have CRISPR, you have all kinds of stuff that's kind of in the horizon.
No. It's amazing. And something that, you know, another technology that I would say create a revolution in the way we treat cancer is something that started with the Human Genome Project. You know, like initially where they map all the genes that we have. So now we can do that in a smaller scale with cancer. So what we do is like you get a biopsy of the tumor and then you are able to analyze the genetic composition of the tumor and then basically identify the medication that works directly on the genetic mutation that the tumor has. That's exactly what you wanted to see.
So you can get right to the exact medication.
The exact medication based on the genetic mutation. And that's what we call personalized medicine.
Yeah, it is.
So that's actually one of the best things that we can see in oncology.
That's amazing.
So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. What you're talking about, what do I see in the future? It's like, look at now. We're gonna be treating cancer. Like if I can put a comparison, like treating a urinary infection where you do the urine culture and you identify the antibiotic that works for that bacteria, we're going to be able to do that. We're actually doing that in cancer where you pinpoint the genetic mutation the tumor has and identify a medication that works directly with that mutation. So that's where we are. And it's a reality. It's not the future. It's the present.
It's the present. Yeah.
It's the present.
And to that point, right, that's something for the folks that are out there. If you do have cancer, keep your heads up. There could be something in the horizon that could definitely be there to help you out. So just keep a positive note, keep healing,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Dr. Story, we definitely feel that you're an extraordinary person extraordinary things. So we'd like to leave our listeners with one last question for you. Based on your experiences, what is one of the most important pieces of advice you feel like you can give them?
I think two different advice, I would say. In the cancer field, the most important thing is to talk to your doctors about a screening in cancer. And there is no doubt, and it's well proven now, that you know everything we do to our body will affect eventually the type of diseases we're going to develop. So people who are exposed to smoking, people who are the diet, you know, will impact eventually the type of disease we're going to develop. So I think we need to be conscious and create awareness of what we put into our bodies and what we expose our bodies to. So I leave that, with the community to create that awareness.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I think as an advice in general in life, after been dealing with cancer for all these years, is first of all that life is about making choices. We all have the opportunity to make choices. And I think that's one of the most powerful things we have. So if we create the habit of practicing gratitude and living a meaningful and a very meaningful life in everything we do and all the actions we do, and we take advantage of the chance that we have to make choices and making the good ones, I think we are going to be able to make a big impact in this world and leave it better of what we got it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Again, thank you for coming on. We're so grateful.
Thank you. Thank you to you guys.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hey guys, we appreciate you listening. If you guys got any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at fullgorillalife@gmail.com. Make sure you guys hit the like button and share our stuff out there on social media.
And if you want to follow us on social media and see what's going on, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Gorilla Life. At Full Gorilla Life. And on Twitter at Gorilla Full, like beautiful but with a gorilla.
Makes it confusing. I totally get it. So please visit our website at fullgorilla.life. And please hit subscribe on your podcast app of choice. Thanks.
Later.
Take care.